Before I begin this morning, I wanted to take a moment and describe and explain why I'm wearing the robe that I am, since you have never seen me in a black robe such as this before. This particular robe is important and meaningful to me, even though I have never worn it before. It is and was the dress robe of my childhood pastor from Pleasant Unity Presbyterian Church in Western Pennsylvania. The most memorable pastor of my childhood, since he was the pastor from my small childhood until I went away to college. I never wore it before because he was a much taller man than I was, so it needed to be hemmed. And I had it hemmed this week to wear today. Now, I was given this robe several years ago. He had retired from the ministry. Even when I had gone back and visited, I had seen him again. He and his wife and my parents were very close personal friends. Sometimes happens in church. And even for pastors, isn't that shocking? And I do know that my parents told him that I was gay, and he knew of my involvement in MCC, even though he and I never spoke of it directly. A few years after his death and a few years after my ordination, his widow sent this robe to me as a gift. And I wear it now for the first time. The second reason, the reason why I had it hemmed this week to wear today, is religious leaders across our nation have been encouraged to wear black this Sunday as an act and a demonstration of solidarity, with those who are protesting and in light of the Michael Brown and Eric Garner verdicts, decisions of those juries where unarmed black men were killed by police who have yet to be brought to account for those killings, that religious leaders are encouraged to be wearing black on this Sunday as a demonstration that we support the call for justice and accountability, which I do. So those two things come together this Sunday, after last Sunday, where Emmanuel Temple Church was also protested by the same four men as we. And it feels to me that I wear this as a demonstration that love and support and allies come from anywhere. And I want to be one. So I would ask you to pray with me, please. God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be a delight in your sight, God, you who are our rock, our strength, and our Redeemer. Amen. There is no preparation for Christmas that can be complete without spending some time reflecting and focusing on Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, in some churches, such as the one I was raised, this was the only time of the year that we paid much attention at all to her. So, depending upon the tradition in which you were raised, if any tradition, we may have very different notions and experiences and attachments to Mary. For most Protestants, Mary, the mother of Jesus, is a pivotal character in the salvation story, a woman of remarkable faith, an exceptional experience of God, always deserving of our abiding respect, even serving as a spiritual model. But for Protestants, not much more, certainly no less, but not more. For others, those raised in faithful Catholic backgrounds, Mary may be the primary face of divine compassion. She remains a living and active sacred person to whom you pray and for whom she prays for us, the Blessed Virgin Mary. And in the Eastern Christian Church, she has long had the name Theotokos, which means the God-bearer, the mother of God. In Islam, Mary is considered the most righteous woman. She's the only woman with a name in the Quran, and she is mentioned in the Quran more frequently than she is in the Christian Bible. And there are prayer niches for Mary commonly found in mosques. Others see Mary and her stories as the ancient and enduring desire to venerate the divine feminine, Mary, the great mother of us all, the face of the goddess carried through Christian tradition. So wherever you find yourself in relation to Mary, the mother of Jesus, every Advent, when we prepare and anticipate for Christmas, we turn our attention to her. Now, we are far more familiar with the second chapter of Luke. It's that wonderful story of the Nativity that is accounted on Christmas Eve and also by Linus in the Peanuts Christmas movie. But chapter one is a masterful prelude to that Nativity story. And if you have not ever or haven't in a long time, I encourage you to read the whole of chapter one. Luke's gospel begins not by telling the story about the conception and birth of Jesus, but it actually, if you are familiar with it, it starts with the story of the conception of John the Baptist. Before Gabriel visits Mary, Gabriel visits Zechariah, the priest, and quite dramatically announced to Zechariah that in their childless old age, he and his wife Elizabeth are going to have a son. Then the attention turns to Mary, the passage we hear today. Tradition calls it the Annunciation, capital T, capital A, the Annunciation. And the angel Gabriel comes to Mary of Nazareth saying, "Greetings, favored one." Wouldn't you be a little alarmed? Wouldn't you be a little puzzled? She is. What's going on? The angel announces that Mary had been chosen by God to bear a child. Now, she wonders aloud about how this can be, that she is a virgin, that she could bear a child. And then she hears from the angel that her elderly relative Elizabeth was pregnant. And then this beautiful quote, "Nothing is impossible with God." Nothing is impossible with God. And Mary responds. We don't know if it was with serenity and confidence, we like to think so, or was it with great fear and trembling? She says, "Here I am, servant of God. Let it be with me according to your word. Here I am, let it be." She says yes. After saying yes, the scene that follows, she hastens to visit her pregnant cousin Elizabeth, and when Elizabeth greets Mary with an enthusiastic prophetic greeting, "Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb." Sound familiar? It's the basis of that great prayer of the church, the Hail Mary. And Elizabeth says that in her own womb, her baby has leapt for joy at the sound of Mary's greeting. And Mary then bursts into response with a song set to music through the ages. We sang it as our second hymn today, in fact. "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior," the Magnificat. And Mary's song is one of the oldest in our tradition. Some scholars are skeptical whether they actually were spoken by Mary And actually, some versions of Luke have Elizabeth singing the song of praise. But whatever the origin of that song, it tells us some very important things that Luke and others believed, if not Elizabeth and Mary herself. That this child, Mary's child, was a fulfillment of promises that had been made to their people, and that fulfillment was going to change the world as they knew it. That's the core story of Mary. That's Mary, the mother of Jesus, as she enters the story. Now, we always want to know more, particularly about such an unusual woman and unusual occurrence. So there have been devout speculations and theological elaborations upon the story of Mary. They abound. But I want to focus for a moment on the very human Mary. The very human Mary, a brown-skinned, illiterate, unwed, pregnant teenage girl of an oppressed people in an occupied country, who said yes to God. Who said yes to God in the face of risks that she would certainly have known. She was not naive. She may have been young, but she was a young Jewish woman in occupied Roman Palestine. She was not naive. She knew some of the risks in store. Now, pregnancy is never risk-free, even in our modern era, but in the ancient world, it was even more risky. But moreover, in her society, in an honor and shame-based society, to be found pregnant out of marriage, she could have been stoned to death on the spot. It was allowed, practiced. If she were allowed to live being found pregnant out of wedlock, she would certainly be disavowed by any of her family and relations. All of the social fabric would have unwound for her. And if she lived through the pregnancy and delivery with all of that support withdrawn, her life would have been as an outcast woman, pretty much suitable for begging and prostitution. Those are the dangers she knew. The dangers she knew by saying yes. What about the dangers she didn't know? You know, if we pay attention to the words of the Magnificat, Mary's song, if we don't just sing them blithely or emptily, they convey a dangerous message. It's not just a song of praise, it is a song that is stirring up trouble with words like God scatters the proud, brings down the powerful. Yeah, you just sung that in a hymn. God brings down the powerful from their thrones, lifts up the lowly. We're a little more accustomed to singing that out loud. Fills the hungry and sends the rich away. In her day, in the Roman Empire, people were tortured and executed for saying the things that Mary sang. Even at her young age, she would have seen hundreds, if not thousands, already crucified for that seditious talk. And lest we think our world so different, in Argentina in the 1970s, the mothers of the disappeared, those mothers of the women whose husbands and sons were taken away in the night, never to be seen again, they put the words of the Magnificat on their protest posters. They urged nonviolent resistance and accountability from the military junta. So the Magnificat was banned in Argentina. And in the 80s, Guatemala banned the reading and the singing of the Magnificat, banned these portions, her song, this text from the Bible, because it was just a little bit too dangerous. Mary had to have known how dangerous her yes was, but I think she was ready for it. I think she was ready for it. You know, Mary is the Greek version of the Hebrew name Miriam. The Greek Bible calls her Mary. Her people would have called her Miriam. Sound like a familiar name? Anyone remember Miriam from the Hebrew Bible? That's the sister of Moses. That's the one who sang at the sea after her people had been delivered from oppression, from slavery in Egypt. Miriam. Mary was named for that ancestral woman, and the name Miriam means rebellion, resistance, uprising. So when we hear Mary and see a serene young woman, I think she was a bit more trouble. She had lived all of her life being called, "You rebel." She was ready. She was ready to say yes. So, by the way, just in case anyone ever calls you Mary, trouble is on its way. She knew it was going to be dangerous. Her yes would change the world. And it was a change that she and her people had longed for. In light of last week's protesters here, I don't know for you, but the decision to come to church this morning felt just a little bit different. I have good news and bad news for you, and it is the same news. You're as safe today as you have ever been at MCC Portland. Now I'm going to say that again. You are as safe today as you have ever been at MCC Portland. Which means if we thought it was easy and comfortable, boring, non-threatening to be a part and show up at MCC Portland, well, we had gone complacent. Last week reminded me, and maybe all of us, that to say yes to God will always involve risk. And it is a risk I'm willing to take. And it is a risk you were willing to take by coming here. All right. We're in good company. We're in good company. There is a simple principle in relationships that I often remind people and remind myself about. That in a relationship, be it a friendship, a partnership, a marriage, any kind of relationship between persons, individuals, it takes two to say yes to the relationship, and only takes one to say no. It takes two to say yes, and only one to say no. You know, there's a story that Reverend Nancy Wilson tells about the founding of MCC. If you don't know, the founder of our MCC movement was Reverend Troy Perry, who founded MCC in 1968. Nancy Wilson likes to say she thinks God had asked lots of people over many years to found MCC, to start doing what Troy did. Troy was the first one to say yes. I wonder if the same was the case with Mary. I wonder how many women had been visited by an angel. How many men had seen a vision of an angel in their dream about a dangerous betrothed partner? How many had God said yes to? And I wonder, was Mary the first one who said yes in return? Advent is the season that we prepare for God's presence to come into our world again. Emmanuel, God with us in flesh. God is ready, willing, eager, and yearning to come into the world. God has said yes to us over and over and over again. Keeps saying yes to us, waiting for us to say, "Here I am." To say yes in return. For us to say, "Here I am," yes in return, and into our world comes bursting through our lives and through our flesh God's very presence. Yes is a dangerous answer, because there is no guarantee that it will be safe or easy. In fact, we have quite the opposite guarantee, if the history of our ancestors is any clue. Yes is perhaps the most dangerous answer, because it will turn the world upside down, and we'll be right in the middle of it. So what is your answer?